And welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z. Hope you're hearing us. And the connection is good. And we're here with another of our wonderful radio programs right here on Progressive Radio Network. And I'm delighted to have Dr. Terry Zachary as my guest today. And he is an entrepreneur, a chiropractor up in Vancouver, BC, and also a writer with a passion for personal health and development. He has specific interest in looking at avoiding sports injuries, particularly of the hands and elbows, like carpal tunnel, de Quervain syndrome, and tennis elbow. And we're going to be talking a lot about that because a lot of people have those things, and he wants to maintain their connection to highest health performance and integrity. So we're really excited to have Dr. Zachary on the program. Dr. Zachary, are you there?
I am here, Dr. Z. How are you doing today?
Good. I have some of my best buddies are naturopaths practicing up in Vancouver. I went to school out in Seattle, Washington, out in Bastyr, and I kind of traveled back to the East Coast to practice, but Dr. Morello, Gaetano Morello is out there, a bunch of people. So yeah, your area is a real hotbed for holistic medicine with Boucher Institute there now and a lot of my colleagues out there. So I'm really excited to have you on there. I've been out there and love that area, the Pacific Northwest and Canada there.
Yeah, it's an area that sets up well. You know, very nice climate, very temperate, actually, a lot of trees. Anybody that's a forager will be a big fan of this area. As far as natural health goes, it's one of the things that attracted me. I'm actually originally from the prairies of Alberta, another area that I love, unique area there as well. But and out here, I came, just fell in love with it. Humidity's fantastic. Very temperate climate. My history is I played a lot of golf and I was very interested and very involved in the golf scene. But also, when you come out here, there's fruits, vegetables, all kinds of natural nutrients available. And it's just a place I became attracted to and for those reasons that you very well summarized.
Yeah, thanks. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background. You're a chiropractor, doctor of chiropractic, tell us a little bit about, a lot of people don't even know, they think chiropractors just crack backs, but my chiropractor says she's a doctor of the nervous system. So take us through the you know, varied definitions of chiropractic and your personal philosophy of it.
Yeah, well, you know, your introduction's fantastic, and you seem like you have quite a sense of the core of what chiropractic really is. And yes, if we crack backs, we'd be in big trouble. We like to say we correct spines. So correct and crack might be about as close as we get on that definition. But like your colleague says, chiropractic is about maintaining the health and balance of the spine. And the reason the spine is so important is because of as people that really truly understand the nature of chiropractic, the spine houses the nervous system, the communication, the internal communication of the body. And you'll see when there's spinal problems, there's very intense reflexes that will stabilize your spine and kind of lock you up. And that's what people think chiropractic is about. But the reason those reflexes are so powerful that they won't let you move is because that spine is housing the nervous system and the connection between the brain and all the cells of the body is what the spine is in control of protecting. So the makeup of the body is, we see it as miraculous and we see it as a natural healer. And kind of our philosophy, as your colleague said, is the philosophy is that the body needs no help, but it needs no interruption. So we want to make sure that your body's always able to communicate within itself and take care of all the, you know, I don't know, hundreds of millions of messages that are going on each millisecond. It's when we look at our bodies that way, the things that are happening each second in our body are controlled on a higher level than we ourselves intellectually could have any chance at understanding completely. And that's the innate intelligence that we're trying to free by correcting and maintaining a healthy spine.
So chiropractic is a more vitalistic thinking versus mechanistic, where mechanism feels like, you know, we control nature, you know, antibiotics, anti this, man versus nature versus working with nature.
Yeah, I think that's a great summary, is that we have to start looking at ourselves. And this is what a true chiropractic at its core will understand, that we are energy. We're not these mechanistic pieces of meat, and like, we're not, you know, bones and meat and connective tissue. We are energy. All those tissues are energy. So we have to always, how we think, what we eat, how we maintain our exercise and our blood flow and lymph drainage, which as we get into the hands, we'll talk about a lot. Those are energy principles. And if we keep if we're looking at maintaining and everything we do in our life and our habits are, you know, what types of foods are we bringing in? What types of herbs are we bringing in? What type of water are we bringing in? All these things are relative to what type of energy we're bringing into our body. We're not mechanistic pieces of meat, and where we can say, well, this, you know, this is happening and that's happening. We're looking at bringing good energy and making sure that the energy that we bring into our lives on a, you know, minutely, hourly, daily basis is makes sense. And that we're, if we want to maintain this high, healthy energy, we have to have habits that invite high, healthy energy, like thought, like we talked about thoughts, foods, habits, all of our habits.
So chiropractors deal with those types of things and are trained in that.
Absolutely.
Type of work. Yeah. A lot of people don't really appreciate that, I think. So I'm glad that we spent some time talking about, you know, I teach medical philosophy. I teach, philosophy of course, naturopathic medicine. And, you know, many times our professions, actually many of the old naturopaths were chiropractors, like Dr. Bastier himself, Dr. Boucher. They were NDDCs first and foremost. And so then eventually our professions kind of had a bit of a schism in the 1950s, but with the breakup of the Western States chiropractic and then the founding of the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland. But yeah, we shared like this common vitalistic whole philosophy. So it's really interesting. And so when you're working with clients, whether they're musicians, I got to tell you an interesting case about this, musicians who can't play anymore because they're developing wrist and hand problems and problems in the forearm, or golfers or tennis pros, or even just the guy that weed whacks all day, you know, like a worker that out there, because that happened to me recently. Yep. Just holding the weed whacker, just trying to get the yard good for the spring. Boy, I developed carpal tunnel. And so that's kind of is a good introduction to our thing. But before we start that, actually, let's talk about the miraculous hand. I was impressed by, first of all, hand surgeons are like, you know, there's a whole specialty of just hand surgery. It's amazing, right? And the hand works through a lot of anatomical and physiological mechanisms there. I know we're not on TV, so you can't show a model, but try to do the hand justice in talking about it.
Well, I think, boy, you know, that's a great introduction to some of the stuff that, well, all the stuff that we do. We've done a lot of, we've participated in a lot of hand surgeon meetings. With our information about exercise and about how to look at the hand as far as recovery after a surgery, for example. But the hand surgeons, they have some intricate stuff to, it's not like any other part of the body. That's what I've found out. I didn't mean to get into this, really. I understood grip on a really fundamental basis, what I thought was fundamentals. And then when you start looking into the fundamentals of grip, you start to see, wait a minute, we have been really on the wrong track. And that gets into how not a lot of people, other than hand surgeons, I would say, and hand therapists, really get into the details of the hand. And when you get into the details of the hand, and like I said, I was kind of in by accident. I worked with professional golfers and professional, being in Canada, with a lot of professional hockey players and high-end amateur golfers and hockey players. It's where I was first tipped off to it. And I knew just from basic anatomy that you have not a certain amount of muscles that are going to close the hand. Now, as we've looked at and isolated, that's 9 muscles. And that's mostly what we've focused on. Because, and this is a good thing almost that we're on radio and we can't see it, because now we have to think it through a little bit. Most people, if you just close your eyes and you think of where are the hand muscles, most people will think of the hands closing and gripping something. And that's as far as our mentality has gotten as far as hand exercise. The problem I ran into with all my athletes is they would come in with these finger, thumb, and like you say, carpal tunnel and wrist and elbow problems. And they would be completely confused on where these things came from. And I would always ask them, and again, this is the athletes I'm talking about specifically, but as my years have progressed, now we work with, like you say, musicians is one of the main things we work with. Workplace injuries we work with a lot, but it's always the same core story. So I could be talking about a hockey player or a professional golfer, and you can equate that to anybody that grips anything on a repetitive basis, on a daily basis in their endeavor. But what they inevitably say is, when I ask them, what do you do to exercise and train your hands? It's one of two answers always. The one answer is, I don't do anything. Or the second answer is, I take something and grip it. The old coiled, hand exercise products or the spring-loaded stuff or a tennis ball. With golfers, I ran into a lot of like tennis balls and racket balls, and they were squeezing those. But when I asked them, what do you do for the 9 muscles that open and spread your hand? Well, they would always inevitably look at me like I was from Mars or something, like I was speaking a different language. And that's the thing, is they don't understand that there is 9 muscles. So I'm rambling a bit, but I want to get back to your original question, was explain the intricacy of the hand muscles. It really is intricate. So now all of a sudden I've got these 9 muscles that close the hand. But the 9 muscles that open the hand, we've found through surface EMG studies, we can prove it through surface EMG studies, that the muscles that open the hand are actually in a co-contraction with the muscles that close the hand. So now you have these 9 muscles that close the hand, you have these 9 muscles that open the hand that are statically co-contracting to hold whatever it is, golf club, paintbrush, dental tool, guitar, whatever. But then you also, I want you to, in your mind, to understand that depending on what activity this individual is involved with, they're also holding their wrist in a certain position. The wrist is not always going through full range motion. So the wrist and forearm are actually positioned in their best position for that activity through 9 muscles contracting too. So the reason I go through all that is now we're looking at 27 muscles all of a sudden, where we used to think, I just squeeze that. Whoa, it's way more complicated than that, because we have to train the 9 muscles that open the hand through their full range of motion. But also you have to consider that you're also repetitively contracting those wrist and forearm muscles for whatever plane and position the wrist needs to be in to, handle a hockey puck or play a guitar or play a trombone, whatever it is, or hold a dental tool. So your question is excellent, and I rarely get that question about, can you explain the intricacies of the hand muscles and why it's such a different area and why they actually need hand surgeons and hand therapists for this particular area? Why not elbow, or why not, shoulder? Well, but the hand is so intricate because of those reasons. And what we've brought on to these athletes as we started training them is we were able to say, wait a minute. It's not just the 9 muscles that you're closing. This is causing you to create a whole imbalance in that whole chain of finger, thumb, hand, wrist, and elbow, and carpal tunnel. You're shutting that chain of muscles down. You need to train the muscles that open the hand through a full range of motion and the wrist and forearm muscles through a full range of motion if you want to maintain balance and not build yourself into this static activity that you're doing daily. I know that's a lot of words, but that could apply to any repetitive grip situation. Is you will adapt into the activity that you're doing every day, and that will be adapting into imbalance. You want to offset that by training properly.
Yeah, that because first of all, you know, when you look at the anatomy, it's just, you know, fantastic. A lot of the people don't know that a lot of the when you take away the skin of your hand and look at it, you know, I remember watching Arnold Schwarzenegger and you know, the Terminator, and you could actually see the intricate cables moving the fingers of the Terminator. And it's kind of like that. You look at the hand and it looks like a Terminator hand. It's kind of funny. And the actual tendons are long, long tendons that go all the way from your around your elbow and forearm all the way to the tips of your fingers. And they have to go through this band around your wrist, which they call the carpal tunnel, which I guess people don't really even, that they've heard the word probably 1,000 times and really don't even know, understand what that is. So it's a, is the carpal tunnel a ligament or tendon?
Well, carpal tunnel is, it's an osteofibrous tunnel. So basically it's a tunnel made through the carpal bones. So there's carpal bones form almost like a U shape.
So carpal means bottom of wrist, the wrist, right? Let's
the bones of the wrist.
Yeah.
Form like a U shaped tunnel. And then the top of that tunnel is the carpal tunnel ligament, as you've pointed out. And yeah, now all of a sudden, you know, once the listener can get an idea of all these 27 muscles, doing their thing, making your hands operate how they have to operate. Then you get into, yeah, this long pulley system where you have muscles that are going, tendons that are going, attaching onto your fingers. They're coming through the carpal tunnel, the flexor tendons of your fingers. They come through this carpal tunnel, and then they're going to come up and attach onto the elbow. So the reach of these finger muscles, when we think, it's just hand muscles. It's just the hand muscles. Who cares about it? That's kind of the way the market and the general culture looks at the hand muscles. Well, anything that happens with the hand muscles is going to affect those fingers, the thumb, the wrist, the carpal tunnel, as we've talked about. And the carpal tunnel is about as big as your thumb. So it's not a great big space. It's got that median nerve that's always going to be the one that kind of lights the alarm that, hey, we've got a carpal tunnel problem. But we prefer to look at it and say, why don't you, if you're in a grip situation, we have to start to realize, why don't we make this carpal tunnel thrive and maintain its position rather than kind of ignore it. And then if we start to get a symptom at one point, then we'll do something about it. And that, Dr. Z, is where we do a little bit more focus on, so what is this carpal tunnel? And if you can, even again, I'll go into the idea that I like radio, because if the listener closes their eyes and takes a paintbrush, everybody's painted in their life. You take a paintbrush and you start to pretend that you're painting. And if you see the little cleavage between the thumb pad and the little pinky finger pad, that little cleavage is where the carpal tunnel is. And if I grab something like a paintbrush, I can see pretty clearly that space, that space collapse, it comes together. Right. If I take my hand and open it and spread it wide, obviously the paintbrush drops, but now I'm strengthening those 9 muscles that open and spread. And you can see now that cleavage between the base of the thumb and the base of the pinky finger becomes nice and wide. And those are the things we want people to realize. If you want that carpal tunnel to thrive, you don't want to be holding the paintbrush all the time. You want to be also opening and spreading, and you need to strengthen those muscles that support the wide carpal tunnel and the balanced finger and thumb, the balanced wrist and the balanced elbow. And that's where our focus has become, is it's really, we often can confuse the listener a little bit with all this intricacy, because it's not something that you're going to comprehend in listening to a program for an hour, but the actual training of those muscles is not that difficult. And it used to be that we'd use 4 or 5 exercises. And if you're going to train the whole wrist and forearm, you're getting into 6 and 7 exercises. The people that I would train with those separate exercises, we'd lose them. They'd forget about it. They'd look at their sheet and they would just become like, you know, too much of an exercise routine for them to really get done all the time. The real adamant ones might, but we've simplified it to where a user doesn't really, as complicated as this area is, the user to train it, you just need to figure out a way to train those 27 muscles. And that's kind of what we've focused on.
Right.
We, because we understand there is so, there's so much poor knowledge about this area and how to train it, we know that we have to make things super easy if we're going to have the layperson be able to keep themselves healthy. And that's what we can do quite easily, even though it's a complicated area.
Well, why is this one area prone to injury? Because if you think about it, I mean, you know, we were designed by, you know, the creator or whatever, the universe, and we've evolved to have this intricate system, and it should work. It should work fine to go where things kind of, the series of pulleys slide underneath this tough carpal tunnel, and you have pulleys, and you have kind of lubrication of these pulleys in a way, if you think about it. I mean, we don't have oil like the Terminator hand, like I said, but yes. You know, we have our own oils and burses and things like that. So what breaks down and so that we're, they come see you and you're like, wow, we could help you.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because you usually think with our design, and we certainly believe the design of the body is, you know, miraculous. But when we think about these areas as well, there's two things come to mind when I get that question. The first thing that comes to mind is, by nature, were we designed to do these repetitive actions over and over and over as much as we, you know, as much as we do in our repetitive society. Now, you know, I don't know that we're designed perfectly to handle cell phones as much as we do all the time. And that's going to cause a problem, because we're really not designed with technology in mind, or with, we're not designed, in my opinion, we're not designed with, in a professional golf setting, we're not designed to stand over 1,000 practice balls in the morning and hit those practice balls and then go play and then go after we're done playing, hit some more practice balls or putts or chips or bunker shots, et cetera, et cetera. But to excel in this competitive day and age, that's what it demands. So that's the first part of the answer to that question. The second part of the answer to that question, because I've had it a lot, and I just think it's one of the best questions when it comes to, like, why does this happen when we're built so well? Well, the second part is, we're also, as humans, we're also given a pretty progressive brain to look at these problems and say, how can we use these hints that nature has given us through anatomy and physiology, and how can we look at this and actually adapt as well as possible into these high repetitive situations? And so that's where my answer is you have to intelligently look at this area. And if we understand these 27 muscles and how this carpal tunnel works, for example, we can see that we cannot afford to be in a flexion imbalance. We can't afford to have those 9 muscles that close the hand completely dominant and shortened, because they're going to start to shorten. They're going to have their micro inflammations and their micro traumas through repetition, and they're going to start to inflame, and then they're going to start to fibrose and thicken. And that's when we get all the problems of these in this repetitive nature. So again, the second part of that, the answer to that question is, we have to be really intelligent as humans to say, wow, we can't afford to build ourselves into these flexion imbalances, because it's the same thing I see in every, whether it's with grip athletes or musicians. Musicians are really, as you've pointed out, really a problem with all the repetitive gripping. But the workplace, like a dental hygienist, for example, those are some of the worst repetitive gripping situations, palms down, small objects. We could speak forever on that one alone. But in those situations, we have to know that our body does not have that much, our body doesn't have the systems to support a repetitive flexion imbalance that really isn't wise. It doesn't take long to realize, wait a minute, we can't be shortening those muscles. And that's what we used to do when we strengthened only the closing muscles and the squeezing muscles of the hand, is that is not respecting the anatomy of the body. So when we see these advanced people on their cell phones, the athlete that grips, the musician that has to grip all the time, we have to intelligently say, these structures cannot handle this imbalance. So we can't create an imbalance. We have to oppose with proper exercise and proper awareness. I know it's a long answer, Doc, but it's,
That was good. That was good, Dr. Terry.
It is certainly that we are not anticipated to do this much repetitive gripping, I don't think, by evolution. Right. Now, that's the way it's come. And now we have to realize the acuteness of the imbalance in a flexion position, which we've had to wake up to, because now we are all repetitive flexing so much more than we ever have.
And what about some of the other weird syndromes? Like, I actually developed De Quervain syndrome from a different type of flexion. That's where the thumb, when you do what they call adduction, we used to say that in medical school because it sounds like ab versus ad. Adduction, that's spreading the thumb from the index finger, for listeners out there imagining this. And when you can't do that, and then there was this test that Dr. Finkelstein developed, which, you know, if you take your wrist and hold it thumb up, close your fist, and then bring your wrist down, you feel this lightning like pain in the, I guess, where your wrist meets the thumb there.
Yeah, basically.
What they call it. But nonetheless, that happened to me from, I was working outside for most of the weekend with my machete, my cutlass, clearing bamboo. Talk about tempered, putting bamboo in the 90s. It was really a great thing. And now I regret it. Right. Nonetheless, I developed this thing and I had to get, different therapies and things like that. So basically you're saying that, just resting the area is not just enough.
No.
For the carpal tunnel, the De Quervain, the tennis elbow, and some of the other things that are going on. We have to look at circulation. We have to look at evening the muscles out. Maybe a Chinese, get at the Chinese medicine. Like, we have to, the qi has to flow, because, the Chinese felt like if the qi was blocked, there was pain and inflammation and injury. Maybe, like you said, the metabolism. I noticed in some of your writing, some of your essays, you wrote about metabolic conditions. And I was thinking that, diabetic, their blood is sticky. Their body's sticky to sugar. Sugar can act as a toxin.
Absolutely.
And bind to things. So it gets complex, the whole aspect of it.
So to look at that, but De Quervain is a tenosynovitis. So it's a really a pretty good condition to even extend this talk on. But it goes back to what we originally talked about. We always have to, the biggest thing that I've found since we really dug in, and we've dug into, these repetitive grip problems for 25 years. Well, since I was traveling on tour with golfers. And the first thing I would always say is, going back to what we even talked about, is we have to remember that we're energy. So we don't want to compartmentalize any. I can tell you that I believe that the training of this hand, wrist, and forearm and elbow area properly is a really big deal. But I'd almost, based on what you just said, I'd almost like to have the listener remember that we're energy. We're not meat. We're not just tendon. When it comes down to that, once you get the microscope bigger and bigger and bigger, we are energy. So you have to look at all those things. The qi, you look at blood flow, lymph drainage, we found to be a really big deal. So I don't want to compartmentalize anything. I think you need to make sure the blood, you talked about diabetics. We want to make sure that the red blood cells aren't sticky. We want to make sure that all everything in the blood is flowing properly. And that happens with different ideas of our, even our ways of thinking, but our diet. But if I can kind of filter this and funnel this down into a discussion of the mechanics, which I never want the reader to think this is just all mechanics. It has to do with how you think, how you live, what you eat, how much rest you get, how much repair the body can have. But we'll go back now. I'll take it back into de Quervain syndrome. And remember what I said is that with de Quervain syndrome is a really isolated example of where there is a co-contraction going on. So when I grab something with my thumb, those extensor muscles, those extensor and spreading muscles are contracting to stabilize my thumb. So we think it's just the thumb flexors grabbing when we use our thumb. No, these extensor muscles are contracting all the time to support that flexor. And that's what that flexor of the thumb. So if you can imagine what the muscles that close the thumb are being supported by the muscles that would usually open the thumb. So all that area is under stress all the time. And down when you're talking about the base of the back of the thumb is where you're going to see that tenosynovitis, that inflammation of the tendon and the synovium in de Quervain syndrome. Well, that's the same thing that, you know, however long ago they called it washerwoman's thumb. They now you'll see de Quervain's in mothers that have babies that are holding their babies like that all the time and having a grip with the thumb. Yourself using a tool in a gardening, you're contracting with your thumb. So our message is you're asking that thumb to do something that you really haven't trained that extensor muscle at all to be healthy under that long of duress and that long of force. So it's going to become, it can easily become overwhelmed. Just like if you were a weightlifter and you tried to lift 100 pounds and you've never weightlifted in your life, that's going to cause injury as well. So again, it comes back to understanding the body. It's the big thing, Dr. Z. And this is why the programs like your program, if people can, the big thing people have to do on their own is they have to learn to understand their body. They got to seek to understand it. And when we look at those 27 muscles of grip, the 9 muscles that close, the 9 muscles that open, and the 9 muscles that support that support the position of the wrist that are in the forearm and the wrist. If we keep those muscles healthy, that thumb is just part of that. We keep those muscles healthy through a full range of motion. You're not going to see very much de Quervain syndrome unless you do something completely crazy and overused. But if we don't ever start to understand this idea, and it's why we've become so involved in this hand, wrist, forearm, and elbow and carpal tunnel area, is that we understand that very few people, and I will even say health practitioners, even natural health practitioners, don't really understand this area. And if we can break it down into the simplicity of balance the 9 muscles that close the hand with the 9 muscles that open the hand and keep in balance those 9 muscles of the wrist and forearm that control that position. Once you can do that, you're going to start to see that there's the de Quervain syndrome is going to be minute. Carpal tunnel is going to go down. Tennis elbow is going to go down. Golfer's elbow, medial epicondylitis is going to go down. All these conditions are based on a misunderstanding of the muscle of the hand muscles, that the muscles that close and the muscles that open have to stay strengthened and balanced. And thus, when we exercise them on a regular basis, we maintain blood flow and lymph drainage. Also a key factors in keeping these tissues healthy. But if we're going to just be passive with them, we're going to just grip and small range of motion, never try to strengthen and balance this whole complex, we are going to continue to see the same problems. There's an explanation. It's just A equals B, A to B to C to D to E, and then whatever that is. If E might be de Quervain syndrome, it might be cubital tunnel syndrome, it might be carpal tunnel, it might be, you know, a lateral or medial epicondylitis. But it's all related to a misunderstanding and a mistreatment of those 27 muscles involved in grip. I know that's a long explanation, but yeah, it's really, really important.
We're going to take a break just to let the engineer know. We'll probably play one of our natural medicine chests, which is our cool little mini modular program in a bit. But, you know, I had a case of a fiddle player, a musician who was having trouble, and he ended up having lead poisoning, which is kind of interesting, Dr. Terry. If you read the ancient provings of plumbumism, which is lead toxicity, it paralyzes the extensor muscles of the forearms. And so piano players and fiddle players,
interesting,
you get like wrist drop and foot drop. So it, anyway, but that's the bizarre case that I just wanted to throw out there, that most of the times it's okay, you're not doing anything all winter, and then it's gardening season and you're trying to get the yard going, or you're kind of laying low. If you're an athlete, you haven't done much over the winter and you're trying to get fit for the spring season and whatnot, and that's when you injure because you haven't been using those muscles. But we'll get to that in a bit, and then talked about your amazing device that you created. So let's, to the engineers, let's take a break. You're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We have Dr. Terry Zachary here talking about all things related to the wrist and elbows and performance and integrity and connecting to our highest health. Stay with us, folks.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss a herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnaminic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinnzenolin and cinnzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
Oh, well, I was going to say that that was serendipity, because cinnamon was one of the substances which got my Decor veins under control by using a lot of the topical things that I've not only developed but learned through my training in Kung Fu and Karate. We've learned that there are a lot of topical things that are used, like some of the HIIT martial art HIIT formulas and powerful anti-inflammatories that myself and Dr. Kamai have talked about quite a bit on the show here and done lots of seminars. We use a lot of pain relieving medicated gauze or substances that we can rub into the joints on a regular basis, again, to move the chi and the blood when we have the injury. But the main thing is preventing that injury. And so I like your idea of what do we do to prevent it, because during the off season, sometimes we're not working the hands, and then we go to do our work, whether we're Tiger Woods with an elbow injury and poor grip strength, or myself getting out there with the cutlass, the machete, clearing the bamboo. That's when we get injured, because we just do too much.
Right. So, yeah. And I think, and in speaking to your point, she makes so many good points that I agree with. And I want the listeners to really get is that it's a diverse approach to keeping any tissue healthy in any part of your body. First part is understanding how that tissue works. And when it comes to muscles and tendons and ligaments, understand how the body actually functions, how it's set up to function. And certainly if you want to keep it healthy, you got to think about the nutrients. So when I talk about our exercise products, then I'll say, hey, this is your exercise component, but then you still need to understand what the components in your blood are. And if somebody says, well, the components in my blood, I really pay attention to, then I say, well, now you need to exercise your body so that those components get properly to the site and get properly, and then all the byproducts of the repair actually get away from the site. So it's got to be an all-inclusive, diverse approach. I want to also comment, Dr. Z, on what you said about, you know, we come out of the winter and we haven't exercised as much. And I'm going to tell you one of the observations is I see a lot of people, and especially we deal with professional athletes, professional musicians. Now we deal a lot in ergonomics. So we're dealing with, you know, day-to-day professionals that are running into problems with this hand, wrist, forearm, carpal tunnel area. And what I'll tell you is that a lot of people don't train and then they go and they do something and, you know, they hurt themselves. That's of course common for everybody. For the professional, the people that we run into, they are actually training. They're saying, I'm getting ready, but they're taking something and only gripping it. And I will tell you that you have a pretty good feel for balance and for what it takes for physical vitality. It's like telling somebody with bad posture to slouch more. Well, we would never in the world see somebody with bad posture and they've got a sore back or sore ribs or whatever. And we would say, oh, I see that you're slouching or that you've got bad posture. I want you to slouch more. We would never give that advice. But yet, that's what the perception is for the hands. People are just, you're gripping in your repetitive, your day, you're gripping your coffee cup, you're gripping this, you're gripping that. Then when we say, boy, I'm going to get my hands all ready for my season or for my work or for my, you know, musical performance, we still see them grabbing something, a spring-loaded unit or a coiled unit or a racquetball or a tennis ball and squeezing. So they're actually progressing faster into an imbalance, if that makes sense.
Right.
And they don't understand that all the muscles, all those 27 muscles need to be taken through their full range of motion, not just what we've traditionally done. And still to this day, I mean, when we speak to people, we change their whole mind about it once they feel what full range of motion hand exercise is all about. But it shows like this where we get to speak to people. Otherwise, the perception out there, even with trainers and even with some trainers, I won't say all trainers, but even with some health professionals and fitness trainers and strength trainers, they're still taking something and gripping it. And that's the message we want to get, is that's not understanding the anatomy and the function of how this works.
What are anti-gripping things people can do then? You know, we're talking about the, you know, that gripping is an important part of our hand, but the anti-gripping.
Okay. And so I would say, so yeah, that, and that's the whole function of what we've done in the last, this is the product. So right. What I used to do is I would give my patients, like we explained earlier, I would give my patients, I think I drove my patients crazy, to be honest with you. I think they said, this guy's nuts. So we'd give them 5 or 6 exercises and to train that whole area. So we would take we'd usually have some form of a squeeze ball. I would use like tennis ball or some form of a foam ball and have them squeeze. Then I would take them and I'd put elastic bands on them, different types of elastic bands. We put them finger to finger and have them spread, but then they'd have to move it to each finger, reposition, and they'd have to move it to their thumb and spread the thumb to strengthen all those extensor and spreading muscles like we were talking about. That would be quite cumbersome, but we had a routine where they would do that. Then they would go through full extension. So they'd have an elastic band around their fingers and they'd open and spread. Now, it did drive me crazy in those days because when they open and spread, the elastic band would slip down and fall. So I couldn't get full range of motion in the opening or the extending of the fingers and thumb because the elastic band would just fall onto the back of the wrist. Then we would have to do, we would do a small weight for the different ranges of motion of the wrist. So supination, pronation, and then ulnar and radial deviation, and then flexion and extension. So you can imagine how difficult all that was for my athletes. You know, they've still got to train the rest of their body. And I'm telling them, hey, if you want to get this area straight and balanced with proper blood flow, proper lymph drainage, you've got to do all these. I just saw that it didn't work. When I was out on tour, I ran into one person that was a really close friend of mine who was a professional golfer. And he, I remember specifically, he came with a tennis elbow. He couldn't even grip his club. And his situation was he had a stable career. He had a wife and two children at home. And he was traveling because he was a really good player and he wanted to see if he could, you know, be a, make it on tour. Well, he couldn't even lift his club. And I remember feeling like this guy needs something right away and he's traveling and I can't show him all these exercises. And that's where we developed this product. It was a really rough prototype, but we designed a ball basically with a resistance cord coming through that attaches onto your thumb and fingers. And that turned into the product that we call Handmaster Plus today. But the point I like to make to people listening is this came out of a need and an understanding. And I didn't have an idea of how to do this all in one exercise until I saw how many people were affected by this problem, how poorly the understanding of this area was. And until that one particular friend of mine he was in a loss and it was something I understood, I was able to say, we'll stop at the next town, we'll find you something. And I couldn't find it. And then something inside you, whatever people believe about, you know, how innovation happens, something inside me just came and said, this concept I think will work. The next day I got some elastic band from Fanny's Fabrics that they would normally be a waistband and tied this thing together, got a ball and tested it with my buddy that was the professional golfer. And it worked so well. And that's where I realized, okay, now we have to do something. And the point is, Dr. Z, it was also simple. I didn't have to, you know, we didn't have this hour-long program that you can present. I didn't have to do all that. I could tell them, here's what you do. You close your hand against the ball. You open and spread against the cord. Close and open and spread. I got it to the point that instead of explaining five or six exercises to him, he could just close his hand, open and spread to start. He could understand it. He could do it. And I could also take all those muscles through their full range of motion without an elastic band slipping off. So that was the genesis of what Handmaster Plus is today. Very simple mechanics. Now I can take it through a full range of motion and it's easy for the user to use. They don't have to understand anything. If they can't remember to close their hand and open and spread, you know, they've got bigger problems than their hand, wrist, and forearm.
Now, if folks are pretty acute, though, Dr. Terry, they come into your office and they're, you know, really, really inflamed. Is it good to exercise? What's your chiropractic wisdom on that? And what kind of be done? Because I think in Chinese medicine, if the condition is very hot, you need to cool it down. I know they don't like ice. They think ice is for dead people. So they use a lot of herbs that are cooling. You ever hear that? Yeah.
I've heard that. I actually like that.
I've written lots of articles and PowerPoint things on sports medicine and training and things like that and talked about that. But they use very cooling herbs like San Huang San, which is like this, they call it herbal ice. That you're supposed to use on your arm for a while. The idea is, I guess, that, you know, they knew somehow that a lot of herbs were powerful anti-inflammatories and would bring that very yang condition to a more yin thing. So I guess my point is, what if someone has, you know, real bad carpal tunnel listening today, what could they do? We know the long-term thing is to prevent it from happening with the proper exercise, like your device is great that you developed that wonderful. But what could people do if they're having an acute flare, say?
And that's where you, again, that's where you need to be with a healthcare professional. So you have to be very clear. What we are very clear about our product, this is a recovery and a fitness product. So this is not, we don't want people to go out and say, here's a treatment and we're going to, we want you to treat. This is not a treatment. This is a recovery after, so we call it a post-treatment recovery. If somebody is unstable, now there's another, it's very interesting because if there was an injury and we didn't have anything, we didn't have to go to work, we didn't have a game, we didn't have a tournament, we didn't have a concert, all in time.
Just typing too. I said just typing.
Yeah.
You know, when I had a wee bit of carpal tunnel or something like that, even moving my fingers to type was excruciating. So
absolutely,
yeah, could be that just simple as that. You know.
We could do a whole episode on typing and what the mechanics are because people think there's nothing to it. It's a big deal. But what I'm saying is that if we were living in a cave and we, you know, we had all day to let things repair, the body would be able to repair these acute situations to the point where now if we understood how to do post-treatment recovery exercises, we'd be back in business. So, but most people don't have that time in this day and age. So there is, and I understand your comment about icing, and I've actually heard that before, and I actually like the philosophy. I don't know enough about that. Particularly, Dr. Z, I'd love to learn more about that, particularly in the realm of my friend that has to get back and he's got a term and he's got to get back on practicing. Let's take that scenario. With his elbow, that's what we did is ice it. It's a little, to me, unnatural, but there's a time factor. And whether I like it or not, he's got to get back and play. He's got to be making money. But the ice now, even if you're using herbs to cool down the area, and that's, again, you're getting back to that energy. You need to take the energy down, but the body is doing its thing to repair an imbalance. That's the acute stage. We think something's wrong, but actually our body is reacting perfectly to correct and repair. We just have to create the right environment for that, which is cooling the body down. So your point is great. I'd love to learn more about cooling the body down with herbs. I know it is just such a common practice in athletic training or when you're working with injuries in sports, which is my background, ice is going on there right away. If there's a better way or a faster way, a more natural way, I'd love that concept. But definitely if somebody's got an acute situation, they have to be managed out of that situation by a healthcare professional. We never suggest just jumping into exercise. The product we've developed is strictly for post-treatment recovery, and it's so that once you've went through this trauma and this acute stage, that's the time where we said, okay, guys, have you had enough of that? Do you want to do it properly from here on in? And that's when you train it properly, and that's when you reestablish blood flow and lymph drainage and muscle balance and full range of motion, long, strong tendons.
And nerve energy,
absolutely.
Doctor of the nervous system, my chiropractor.
And you talked about early Dr. Z, which I want to make point because I think it's a great thing. I'd like to look into the lead poisoning example that you did, and I think obviously we don't want lead in our body, so toxins in the body are something that are completely overlooked.
They noticed that doctors noticed, I guess, back in the days of when Hahnemann and his colleagues were doing the homeopathic provings, when they would actually see what happened, unfortunately, when people took lots of lead, it would have a very interesting way. It would paralyze the muscles where only the extensors, am I right? But yeah, only the extensors would be, it would probably affect the flexors. So extension, folks, if you're listening, is kind of like bringing your wrist and hand up.
Yeah, backwards, kind of.
Pulling it backwards, whereas flexion would be kind of pulling it forwards type of thing. So it would affect the muscles in your, like, upper forearms, and then, of course, in your legs, it would do the same thing. It would affect the quadriceps versus the hamstrings. Am I right there? Yeah, I think so. And then it would really affect the muscles, the peroneus muscle, which brings the foot up to up. So, and they said it would cause paralysis in piano players, fiddle players, wrist drop. So it was a very interesting case that this guy had. I tried everything, Dr. Terry, all these different devices, strengthening. Eventually, I had to just look at the case, say, maybe there's a toxic obstacle to cure, you know? And sure enough, when I checked his blood and his hair, too, by the way, we did both.
Yep.
He was very toxic in lead. He lived in an old house in a place, you know, upstate Connecticut, and was remodeling his house. And he had acute lead poisoning, not even a chronic one. You know, sometimes you can check the blood and it's negative for the lead, but the hair says it's positive. And that's because it hasn't been 30 days. It's 30 days and it's cleared out of the blood and now put in the repositories of the body. But in this case, this guy had acute lead poisoning. So I learned a lot from that case.
Well, it's another example of why you have to look at the whole patient. Even with, like I say, with us, we are doing, in this particular part of our focus, we are focusing on exercise. But you have to always, a good practitioner looks at that whole body. And even what you're talking about, it's interesting to me, Dr. Z, because when people get an electrocution, if you've ever been electrocuted, your extensor muscles are actually, your extensor muscles are dysfunctional for that time. And it's hard to take your hand off. I've only had it happen once. So by personal experience, I know it's like, you got to focus to get your hand off of it. But that's one of the things.
We're running out of time. I'm just looking at the clock. Boy, I could talk for hours with you, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Out of time. So let's make sure folks can get in contact with you. So if they want more information or want to talk about their case or look for your product, where could they get it?
So they can go to, the product is called Handmaster Plus. There's lots of information on the website, which is handmasterplus.com. My direct email, you can get me through info@doczac.com. That's doczac.com. I'm happy to answer any questions that people have. But mostly on Handmaster Plus, about the finger, thumb, hand, wrist, carpal tunnel, forearm, elbow exercise. They can get a hold of me. You can just look at the information at Handmaster Plus and info@doczac.com.
It's been wonderful talking to you about this amazing instrument, our body, and particularly our hands. Thank you so much.
I've enjoyed it a lot, and I love your perspective. I love how you're teaching people that there is so much they can do for their body that is natural and easy to do.
Great. Have a great day. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always contact us at drznaturally.com. If you want, by the way, if you want those protocols for sports injury using Chinese medicine and things like that, we could certainly send you the link. Same thing with you, Dr. Terry. And of course, naturalnurse.com as well, with the natural nurse. Stay healthy, folks, and see you soon. Bye-bye.